Pajamarama. It's not just for Brian Eno anymore. It's Arson Clair, 74. Hi, everybody. Welcome to Arson Clair. I'm John.
And I'm Aaron.
And today, Aaron, we're going to be talking about Pajamarama. Yeah, but before we get into Pajamarama, Aaron, we need to thank our Clives Club members that are making this whole thing possible, Paul Harrington and Mick Chessers.
Thank you.
Now, Aaron, I'm sure you've had one or two Pajamaramas in your day. What's your most memorable sleepover experience?
Well, you know, it's been a while since we had a pajama party type sleepover.
I know that you're sort of, you know, I mean, you are tremendously aged. Were you of the age group and of the social status to go on the panty raid during the sleepover at any point?
There's a thin line between panty raid and sexual assault, boat. I'll be honest with
Listen,
you.
Listen, no, there's not. Not anymore, there's not.
So, no, we didn't. And my college career was marred by non-fun times. There wasn't a lot of frat shenanigans. We weren't hassling the uptight dean. Any of that crap. And I know you didn't do any of that crap. Who really did that stuff? This isn't Porky's boat. So no, we did not ever do that stuff. All that said, though, when I was a kid, we'd have the old pajama party. You'd stay up late. You'd have all your buddies over. And then you'd watch a bunch of VCR tapes on the old VCR. Usually horror movies. Although I've had some over the years where it was like nothing but like karate movies, like the ninja movies and stuff like that. Those are always a lot of fun. Of course, ultimately it ends with you beating up whoever else is at the party, making a huge mess. And then your parents come in and scream at you until you go to bed and you feel bad. Then you whisper with each other for another 3 or 4 hours. Then you get up to crack of dawn because you're a kid. You've got that sort of jack. You know, so like pajama party today is like the old people come in their sleeping tunics. You know, they go out for dinner about 4 o'clock. They come home. They watch 60 Minutes. And they hit the sack. That's a pajama party when you're this old. But back in the old days, it was a lot more fun. What about you?
I remember in 7th grade, my buddy Joey had a sleepover. It was probably on his birthday or something. And we played Sega Genesis. He had the Sega Channel. He's the one guy that I knew that had Sega Channel.
Wow, that is impressive, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, so we did that. Hat Chad was in attendance. I think it was just me, Joey, and Hat Chad. And
so that really is not much of a party.
Well, listen, for me, that was a huge slam.
This was a social event of the year, three-man party.
I still remember it. We watched Jurassic Park. I remember that. And,
Jurassic Park? That's not even that long ago. My old roommate used to play that on loop on her VCR just over and over. I remember I'd be like, please turn that off. She's like, no. Oh, I mean, just day and night I'd hear that god-awful video. So I keep forgetting that you're not very old. It irritates me.
The next day we woke up and we got in the back of Joey's dad's truck. And when I say in the back, I mean in the back. The truck had a topper on it and we were riding around in the bed of the truck.
Cool.
We went to Chuck E. Cheese, and I got this insane rash on my arm because I put my arm down somewhere in the bed of the truck, and there was some sort of, I don't know, parasite or something lurking there, and I got this crazy rash on my arm. But then we went to Chuck E. Cheese. That was it.
That's the story, eh?
That's the story.
Well, I mean, you know, I hope you three had a good time. You know, in the old days, you could ride in the back of a truck with no problem, topper or no topper. We'd all be back in the back of that sucker. No seatbelt, standing up, sitting down, maybe have a dog back there.
You know, I still see people in the hills of West Virginia riding around in the back of the truck. I think you're still legally allowed to do that. I think that's why they made the seatbelt rule the way they did, because technically in West Virginia, you don't have to wear a seatbelt in the back of the car, you know, if you're sitting in the back seat. And I guarantee you they made that rule because they knew people would be, you know, driving around, hauling people in the back of their pickups.
To be fair, that in West Virginia, it's illegal to ride around with no seatbelt in the back of a tractor or a hay wagon. Or a horse-drawn buggy. I mean, they don't care. If they let those four-wheelers on the road, you think they're going to care if you're wearing a seatbelt in the back of the
truck? Those things are a scourge to God and man. There are people that drive those things around my neighborhood all the time at all hours. They're loud. They're annoying.
That's the way I figure Jack Flack drove around his neighborhood in his golf cart, just raising hell, driving around, throwing stuff in people's yards. Damn kids.
So, Pajama-rama, Aaron. Let's talk a little bit. Actually, you know what? Before we get into Pajama-rama, we should probably update. We got a Patreon update for everybody before we get into the show proper. Well, normally, we don't talk too much about Patreon, but there's been a pretty nice change that's happened since last month. You know, the support that we receive every month on this show is nothing less than astounding. People are really, you know, putting forth their cash to get us to that $200 a month goal. But I've decided, Aaron, and by I mean we did this as a team effort. We decided to sweeten the pot a little bit. And what that means is that we now have three levels of support that you can support our Sinclair at. So you can support the show at the $2 a month level. And I mean, the $2 is not a whole lot of money, but it means a lot to us. You know, and if you want to just kick in $2 a month, we certainly do appreciate it. But if you want to step it up to $4 a month and become a Spectrum supporter, Aaron, you get every year at Christmas time an exclusive Sinclair supporter magnet. This year's magnet features the one and only Trash Man on it. You can, that's got to be one of the best games that we've done on our Sinclair. Wouldn't you agree, Aaron?
Good magnet too.
And if you decide to support the show at $10 a month, you can become a member of Clive's Club. That's right, Clive's Club. Not only do you get to help choose the game that we play on each and every episode of our Sinclair going forward. This next episode after this one is going to be the debut of Clive's Club. But you can also receive a Clive's Club magnet that features this month's game, Pajama-rama. This also is going to come in at Christmas time. Of course, you also get the supporter magnet. So you get two big magnets for supporting the show. And that's not all. We have other shows on the network that we do. Amigos, Everything Amiga. We do 1200 XL, all about the Atari 8-bits. And the Coco Show, all about the TRS-80 Tandy color computer. We have game selection committees on all of those games. And if you're in one, you get voting privileges on them all. So you can help choose the game that we play on Amigos, on 1200 XL, and of course, Clive's Club. You can nominate the games. Then our Clive's Club chairman, who is Paul, a.k.a. Hermsky, he creates the poll with the nominations. Everybody votes on the poll on Discord, and boom, we have our game for the next month. So we do appreciate everybody who supports the show and is helping us reach that $200 goal of making our Sinclair a weekly show.
Thank you.
All right. Enough of that banter. Let's move on to Pajama-rama, Aaron.
Okay. Now, of course, I always ask, but is this one you knew about before this week?
This one I had not heard about, but I was familiar with the WALL-E series of games. I'd heard people talk about the WALL-E series before.
Okay, very well. I'd never heard of any of this stuff until we got into this thing. So we are playing Pajama-rama, released in 1984 and created by Chris Hensley. He has done a few games, more than a few games over the years for the old ZX. He did a game called Custodian. I want to look into that one for some reason. Onslaught, Verminator, Equinox. He also did the ZX port of Xevious and Battle of the Planets, the old G-Force, which I didn't know that had a game.
Okay.
I don't know if that, I mean, that was the name of the show, so I'm assuming it's based on the show, but that'd be fun to see. The unique cover art for this tape was done by a fellow named Graham Campbell, and he did a couple of the WALL-E games. Everyone's a WALL-E and Automania.
What do you think about this particular cover art, Aaron?
It's not my favorite, but it's stylized. I believe I read somewhere, and I tried to follow up and share where I read it, but it seems like I read somewhere that the WALL-E here ended up having a comic strip in one of the magazines, if I'm not mistaken. So I don't.
Okay, I can
see
that.
So I'm not sure if this fella did the art or he's just a guy. I mean, he did these two games art, and that's pretty much all I could find that he did for the Spectrum.
Yeah, it's weird when I saw the cover of this game, I thought that you were going to play as a baby, because if you don't look at WALL-E's face, the way that the chair is drawn or the table leg is drawn, it looks like he's just a little kid, that he's about 2 feet tall.
Well, you know, it's funny you should mention that, Boat, because I actually, that sort of plays into the story in this game, if you'll indulge me a little bit. So, the story of this game is that even the tape on the back here, the flavor text says, even Wallys have to sleep. The trouble is, being a Wally nightmare is more troublesome than you'd think. So what you're doing here is you're basically playing Wally's nightmares. For one thing, not only do you still look and act like Wally, you also are smaller than everything else that tape goes on to say. So the cover is sort of in line with the overall size of the world. And if you watch your character go through here, he's smaller than everything. Now, something tells me that the story was a convenient way of saying, because we see this all the time, that the size comparisons are off. But that's just the way it is. But you are small. Now, this game is a flip screen, I'd say, action-adventure game, Bo. Does that sound about right? Puzzler?
Yeah, it's a flip screen adventure platformer.
You're great at summarizing these things. And so what you're going to get in this game is sort of your classic Speccy style game, where you're going room to room and overcoming whatever obstacles are in the room to gather items that you're going to use somewhere else, Boat. But we'll get to that in a moment. I want to go over the particulars a little bit here. So this was a ZX48K game. This original price, Boat, this is another one that was £7.95 back in the day. And it supports redefinable keys and, of course, the Kempston and the Spectrum joystick. So it's got wide support for that sort of thing. Again, playing your character, Wally, is asleep, and he has to go to work the next day. And so he cannot find the key to wind his alarm clock. So ultimately, your goal in this nightmare scenario is to go through the house, find the key, and then bring it back to the sleepy Wally, wind his alarm clock so he can make it to work on time. There's your plot, Boat.
Yes.
A convoluted, goofy, but that sort of summarizes this game in a lot of ways, too. You run around, your button will jump, and you run around avoiding various obstacles in rooms and jumping over stuff to get parts, like we said, gather them to use to solve puzzles that will ultimately lead you to that alarm clock key. Bo, when you first loaded this bad boy up, what were your initial thoughts?
My initial thoughts were, I really like the way this game looks. To me, this is a classic example of why I like the ZX Spectrum. You've got pretty fluid animation of the main character. He moves quickly. The things on screen move quickly. You've got every color in the Spectrum palette is present on almost every screen. You know, those delightful neon hues are all present. You've got a HUD that's very easy to understand. It's not overly large. It doesn't put the name of the game uselessly in the HUD. And the way that I thought that a lot of the things were kind of cute. For example, you don't have a life bar. You've got what's called snooze energy. Okay.
Yeah.
And basically it's like a glass of milk, I think. Isn't that what the docs say it is?
Okay.
And as you go through the house, your snooze energy will click down on its own. But if you hit an enemy, boy, the snooze energy takes a big wallop. But scattered throughout the game, there are bottles of milk and other things that you can consume that will refill the snooze energy. Okay, so beside the snooze energy, you've got your inventory slots, and this game has two inventory slots. If you're familiar with the Dizzy games, were probably the first games. Don't quote me on that. Well, you can. I'll just be quoted wrongly. But I think the Dizzy games were the first games to do inventory like this, where they show you what you've got. And then when you can only hold so many items, I think in some Dizzy games it's only one, but in this game you can hold two items. Essentially what you're doing is when you run over an item or when you touch an item, the thing that's in the first slot will be dropped. And then the thing that's in the second slot will go to the first slot. I might have said that wrong. I think if whatever is in your first slot will go to the second slot. Yeah, it rotates in and out. Okay. So that's essentially what you've got on the screen. The rest of the screen is the glorious Wally Manor. Okay. And I'll tell you this, in terms of first impressions, I had a good amount of time. I had a good time playing this game, just walking around, just sort of taking in the different rooms. And to me, what attracted me to this game right away was that unlike a game, say, like we played on Amigos the other week, Gremlins 2, which every room is just out to murder you immediately by like the endlessly spawning enemies and stuff like that. This game is more of a laid back, almost kind of like Manic Miner, but not quite as difficult, where you enemies appear, they move in repeating patterns, and it's your job to kind of weave in and out of them. And it's not that difficult. The enemies in this game, at least the ones that I saw, they're here as sort of a minor hindrance. But this is not a one-shot death game. You can get hit and still move on. They're just there to kind of add a little bit more. You've got to be deft at the controls to be able to beat this game. But you don't have to have pixel perfect controls to be able to succeed a little bit, which I enjoy. So those were my first impressions.
You know,
how about you?
You're right when you say it's more of a laid back experience. To me, this is a Jet Set Willy layout. Basically, after you drink a bunch of sleep aid, everything slowed down. And then you throw in a little trap door puzzle solving stuff in there.
Sure.
This, to a certain degree, I mean, this doesn't look like trap door, but it's, you know, that kind of get this to do that. You know, we've seen this a few times. These games are really popular on the Speccy, apparently. It's funny. Mm-hmm. These almost remind me, Boat, and you're an old NES guy, but these sort of remind me of, like, the missing link between the PC and the NES, those games that you would play in the NES where you had to run around and backtrack, that kind of stuff, getting parts and stuff to do other stuff.
Yeah.
Like this.
Yeah. I really think that this type of genre, I think, is uniquely British. I didn't play a whole lot of Japanese or American games the way I describe these games is they're like point and click adventures with light puzzle elements or light platforming elements, because essentially what you're doing is the same thing that you're doing in Monkey Island, where you've got to find the pulley with the rubber chicken with the pulley in the middle to slide down the rope. You've got to solve ridiculous puzzles by getting items and combining them with other things or using them on things. The thing that this genre adds is the platforming element, where you also have to be able to negotiate your character, not just point at things. And as far as I'm concerned, this is one of the few genres that can truly be said this is a British medium.
Yeah, it's a, I'm sure you were upset that there were no room names, because that's the
that is one of the things that really I would have liked, because it also would have reminded me of what things were, because there are a couple rooms in this game, particularly the staircase rooms, that do look sort of similar. So I would have liked to have seen room names. However, they make up for it somewhat by giving every item a definite article.
Yeah.
So you never just have you have the magnet, the fuel can, which I thought was kind of charmingly British.
I sat down. Of course, I had no idea. I'd never heard of this. I didn't know what to expect from it. And when I got in here, obviously it was pretty easy to get room to room, so that's not really an issue. The bad guys are almost there just to irritate you. There are a few places where it's easier or harder, but I to be completely honest with you, I did not get very far in this game because I had no idea what I was doing. I had no idea what was going on, and ultimately I had to go find a walkthrough just to even have any notion as to what was happening. I mean, I knew what the game wanted. You know, I knew what kind of game it was, but I had no idea, how to get anywhere. You know, I found this game sort of puzzling. It's one of those nonsensical style games where you just sort of, if you had this game and you played it over and over and you were in that frame of mind, you could figure this stuff out. But heck, I couldn't have figured some of this stuff out on my best day, some of these puzzles.
Well, and that's the thing. I think that a lot of these types of games really went off the deep end in terms of how cryptic they made the puzzles. But again, that's a very British thing. Like if you ever try to solve a British crossword puzzle, compared to, say, the New York Times crossword puzzle. The British crossword puzzles are insanely more difficult because not only do you have to know the answer, you have to work out the funny joke that is also implanted in the clue. And this, in the instructions in this game, is the classic, we don't know what you're doing. You're going to have to figure that out for yourself. Ha, ha,
yeah,
ha.
Well,
and I think that thing flew in England a lot more than it flew anywhere
else.
Yeah,
I'd say you're right. Now, to get to the good points that I enjoyed, I like the look of the game. I like the speed it played. I like the color palette. There was quite a bit of color clash in there, but by this time they had figured out how to like basically make it lessen the impact of the color clash. I mean, you're going to see it whenever you jump around, but when you're standing still or you're just looking at the room, it looks good. You know, you don't really get any action if you go over it. I like that. I like the fact that I wasn't instantly murdered. You know, the life bar thing is good. The milk, the snooze energy. On the flip side, it's one of those games where, if an enemy is on top of you, you'll just drain you pretty quick. But still, hey, being able to take more than one hit, that's sort of a unique aspect. Until I read the back of the tape, I didn't understand why everything was so, you know, I thought it was just a graphical thing. But I like the fact that they at least tried to explain why everything's so big. There's a large amount of rooms in this. I don't know how many exactly, but it seems like there's a lot of area to cover. You go everywhere from upstairs, downstairs, basements, and outsides. There's a lot of stuff. But ultimately, for me, I didn't know how to get anywhere in this. I didn't think it was fun enough to break my back trying to figure it out. To me, it just seemed like another one of those games that we've played before that I just don't really – that they just don't appeal to me that much, Bode.
Yeah, well, I don't know. I think that this style of game does appeal to me because I do like point-and-click adventure games. But I like a little bit more hand-holding, especially at the beginning. Yeah, especially at the beginning, because this game truly does turn you loose. It doesn't tell you, because a lot of these puzzles, for example, I'm going to back up a little bit, because I'll tell you the number one problem that I have with this game isn't any of that. The number one problem that I have with this game is I found it very difficult to pick certain items up and therefore thought that certain items were not pick-upable. For example, in the bedroom, in one of the bedrooms, there's a library ticket to combine with the library book. And I tried like gangbusters to jump up there and pick up that library ticket, and I just couldn't do it.
I didn't know exactly what it was, but I know exactly what you're talking about. I did the same thing.
And so finally, I was like, well, I guess this isn't an item, because this game is littered with items that you can't interact with. And so if I were going to improve this game, I would tell you straight up, when you enter a room, maybe on the left side, I'd replace like the number of lives with these are the items that are in this room. And that would at least give you an idea of like, okay, these are things that I'm meant to pick up, so I need to try really hard to jump up here and get this thing. And it also would help you solve the puzzles more easily, because you'd build these mental associations. Now, a lot of these things, reading through the walkthrough and reading through the solution, there are things that I would have never, ever been able to figure out on my own. But some of the things I could have, but it's the idea that this is entirely non-linear. That, you know, it's not as if certain sections of the puzzle are blocked off and you can't get to them until you get to other things. Like, there are all kinds of things to do from the beginning. And it just made me feel like I would never be able to figure this out on my own. And I'm sure that in certain situations, like we talk about this almost every episode, if this was the only game that you were going to have for 6 months and you devoted your life to it, you could probably get pretty far. Maybe not solve it, but get pretty far and have some satisfaction. One of the things that I love, 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 love about this game is that when you die, they give you a percentage completion. I wish every single game did that, because that gives you an incentive to want to do better. Because if they didn't give you that, you'd have no idea what you'd accomplished if you'd accomplished anything.
Yes, I agree. You know, and just to follow up on what you're saying, this game is not my bag. That said, what this game does have going for it is not what every one of the games like this have, which is it's playable. It controls well. I can tell what's happening. okay? And so, in this genre of game, this would be one that if I was going to play it, I would go back to because I like the inventory system. Everything's spelled out. You've got hit points. It's not super deadly. So this genre, this is probably one that I could get into if I had no choice or if I had plenty of time to kill. I will say one thing that surprised me. And I read about this later, but I actually stumbled onto it just when I was running around the house. I came into a room that had a door that said like video game on it. I think's what it said. And I rolled in there, and inside the room, you play Space Invaders.
Yeah.
Did you see that one?
I did. There's two places in the game where that happens. I only actually physically made it to the video game room where I, but I mean, and as far as I could tell, you don't actually accomplish anything by completing Space Invaders. I read it as this is, you know, video games are a waste of time. When you play it, you're just wasting your time, and it's just another funny thing. But I think there's another area when you're on the moon or whatever where the Space Invaders appear again.
I thought I did pretty well at Space Invaders. If you complete it, you get an extra guy.
Oh,
so there isn't into it, but I thought that was kind of neat. Hey, that's clever that they stuck that in there. Aside from that, otherwise the mansion or house is just sprinkled with the kind of enemies that you sort of expect to see in games like this, just weird stuff floating around. I will say the Space Invaders didn't shoot conventional weapons. They were throwing irons and books and all kinds of weird crap.
It was like every character set that existed, which isn't a bad way to go because you've already built those character sets into the game.
It was
very
strange. And ironically, your guy shoots forks, spoons, and knives. I think so he shoots upwards at them. So what the heck? I guess these games are always very odd, to say the least. I also, now, Boat, I was going to ask you about this. I played this on the ZX Next core on my Mister, okay? According to what I found out here, there are two versions of this game that play two different tunes, okay?
So I can tell you right now, the version that I had played that Immortal Classic
popcorn. I didn't have that one. How did it sound?
It sounded like popcorn.
Did it play the whole time?
I've grown to hate that song. Oh, no, only during the title screen.
Okay, that's what So I didn't get popcorn on mine, so apparently there's another version that plays just like a random thing. You know, both this got released for not just the ZX, but the C64 and the Amstrad. And just for fun, I pulled up the Amstrad version to see how it looked. You know, I kind of like the Amstrad. I think you do too. And it's fun to see how it compares. And it looks fairly similar. What you say, of course, clearly, once again, despite the fact that the Amstrad could have displayed more colors and done everything else, they decided against it. And it looks eerily similar to the Spectre version, doesn't it?
Yeah. Now, of course, as with all these sorts of videos, we don't know what kind of hardware they're being recorded on. So the Spectrum version looks super sharp compared to the Amstrad version, but we don't know if that has to do with the capture that was being used. But it is sort of weird. You know, just how close the game looks, but it has just enough, you know, dissimilarities that you're like, yeah, that's definitely not on the Spectrum.
You know, it's funny. If you look at the text, you can tell that the Amstrad version just isn't as focused in as the Sinclair version, because you can just see by the amount of text on the screen.
Everything looks stretched.
Yeah, it just looks sharper on the Spectrum. Now, of course, if taxed, the Amstrad probably could have done everything the Spectrum one did, plus more. Lo and behold, they've pretty much done the same old on that. I really do feel bad for those Amstrad owners back in the day that were sold a bill of goods, and then when the rubber met the road, no one delivered on what this thing could do. It's taken 20 or 30 years for the Amstrad to finally get its due. Very strange.
Yeah.
So,
yeah. Now, there's one more fun little fact that I thought I'd share. There is a song that was written in honor of Wally. You know, Wally was the star of multiple games, and as a sales tactic, I guess they employed the guy that played Mr. Spooner on "Are You Being Served" to sing a humorous song about Wally, and it might be the most British thing I've ever heard in my life. If you've not heard the song "Everyone's a Wally," You need to listen to it right now. And there's actually an excellent music video version of that somebody has put together where they put fun facts about the WALL-E series of games. They show clips of all the various games while they're playing the song, and they have the lyrics on the bottom. So very well done package. Make sure you check that out. Everyone's a WALL-E on YouTube.
I'm glad you mentioned it, because this game is the second in a series of five games. They're a WALL-E Week series. The first one was called Automania. The second one is this one, Pajamarama. The third one is, in fact, called Everyone's a WALL-E. The fourth one is Herbert's Dummy Run. And the fifth one, 3 Weeks in Paradise. That one came out in 96. So you had 2 in 84, 2 in 85, and 1 in 86. So if you're a WALL-E fan, you've got your date book covered here. I looked at some reviews on this from the back in the day. The people over at Spectrum Computing give this one a 7.9 out of 10. Crash gave this a 92 and were very complimentary of it. It won a Crash Smash and also was quite popular in other mags. Your Spectrum gave this 90. Eurogamer gave, this is a more recent review, gave it an 80. And Sinclair User of the Day gave it an 80%. One thing I thought was amusing is that the game was so popular in a certain circles. When this thing became, basically the Spectrum version of Pajamarama was Game of the Month in Personal Computer Games magazine. And they've mentioned here that it beat out the BBC Micro version of Elite. So that
wow.
is... That struck me as strange, to be honest with you. I'm sure there were some people that were... can you imagine working on Elite all that time and getting beat up by this would be quite interesting. I'm sure it's quite a feeling. Did we have any Discord action on this one, Boat?
Yes, we did. We got quite a few reviews, and we also did a high score challenge on this game, sort of a mini high score challenge. Of course, you can't really do high scores with this game, but they did have, like... who can actually complete the game. So we'll do both review and that. Let's see, coming down here, we're going to start things off with Pajaco 6502. He says, being an ex and on and off Speccy owner, this is one I'd never played. I'll admit at first it's confusing. There really isn't hints as what you have to do. So the first few times you play, it's a little trial and error. The puzzles are a little obscure and have taken me a while to get, but so yeah, I looked up some help.
Yeah.
The death sequence is cool, but the first time, but having to sit through it every time does grate a little. Some of the enemies are next to impossible to jump over, and if that axe gets anywhere near you, you're pretty much done for. The collision detection was a little annoying, especially for the jumps. However, after a few plays, you start to figure it out and the game grows on you. I can see why it's a favorite of a lot of people. I will go back to this, and for Speccy games of its time, I'd give it 8 out of 10.
Did you have any trouble with the collision detection and the jumping?
Oh, yeah. I had all kinds of trouble. Like, when you're trying to jump up onto objects, yes. Like I said, with that library ticket thing, that's one of the main faults of the game, in my mind. Now, the actual controls, WALL-E, I felt like I could move them around, but it was just, like, the ledges and things like that were difficult for
me. I think Pajaco... stumbled onto something there when he said that after a spell you understand how it works, and that's exactly the way I felt early on. I had trouble, but after I'd played it for an hour or so, I managed to get understand how the controls work and how the collision was going to work, and it worked fine after that.
Mitsuyama writes, this is probably my favorite of the WALL-E Week games. While there's nothing particularly innovative here, it's a good example of the genre. Once you know what you need to do, the game is quite short, but the fun comes from mapping out the house and working out what you have to do with each of the objects, and this took me weeks to complete when I was a kid. This is just like what I was saying. If you have your trusty notebook and you're mapping things out and you're writing down all the items and you know, thinking about it outside of game time, this would be a very satisfying experience, I think. He says, the puzzles have some logic to them, although I'm not sure how obvious some of them would be to people from outside the UK. For example, would they know that spending a penny is associated with the toilet or that BP is associated with fuel? The controls are good, but the jumping takes a while to get used to, and some of the enemies can be frustrating, but that's part of the challenge of the game. 8 out of 10.
We do know BP. We got that.
We do. We got those here. The penny associated with the toilet.
Someone explain that to me sometime.
Yeah. Paul, a.k.a. Hermsky, writes, a Herm firm 9 out of 10. A superb original little puzzler that came with so much charm and characteristics. Vibrant, colorful graphics with smooth animated sprites making this game near perfect for the Spectrum. The game provides an array of puzzles to solve, some frustrating, leaving you thinking the game was bugged. It's a game that needs an investment of time and patience that will finally reward you with Awakening Wally. Mac Chesers writes, when I played this back in the day, I had no idea what was going on, but I still enjoyed exploring Wally's wacky dream world. Now that I'm an adult, I have no idea what's going on, but still enjoy Wally's wacky dream world. The cartoon sprites are great, and Wally himself is adorable with his little nightcap and potbelly, though some sections suffer from some serious color clash that turn enemies into unrecognizable mush. Some awkward platforming aside, it's great fun. 8 out of 10. Z9K9 writes, cheerful and well-made. The item chain puzzles make a nominal, surreal sense, though are sometimes undermined. I love spending a penny to enter the bathroom, except there's nothing to show you it's the bathroom until after you've entered. The Space Invaders game within a game was very novel at the time. And finally, Jed Byrne writes, the cartoon graphics are colorful, but the color clash is dreadful. It doesn't matter because the charm shines through. I lack the patience to do the mapping and inventory management to complete the game, but it doesn't matter because exploring the house is so much fun. So many flaws, but none of them matter because the game is just so likable. 8 out of 10. So, yeah, the Discord community was on board with this. And just a reminder that if you support R. Sinclair on Patreon, you get access to our Discord, and you can write a review of whatever game we're playing, and we will read it live on the air in the next episode. Now, going back to the old high score challenge, we have three people competed. Z9K9, Mitsuyama, and Paul, a.k.a. Hermsky. They managed a full completion playthrough of Pajamarama. Wow. They did it all.
Very good, fellas.
And yeah, so congratulations to those three. Not congratulations to me. I think I maxed out at about 25%. So
yeah, not easy.
Now, Aaron, speaking of next week's game, we're going to be playing, Aaron, one of your and my favorites games, Rodland, Aaron.
Okay, yeah, Rodland. It's funny. I don't think I've ever played that on the Spectre, so that should be interesting.
Me neither. So this was our first Clive's Club vote, as we talked about at the beginning of the show. Everybody who's a Clive's Club member gets to nominate a game in a particular category. So I believe that this one is the platform and shooter category. And of course, all the Clive's Club members vote. And the winner was Rodland. So congratulations to Duncan for nominating the game. Thank you to all of the Clive's Club members for voting. Yes. And Aaron, of course, we couldn't go anywhere without listing all of the fine, fine folks that make our Sinclair happen every week for now, but maybe before too long, or every month, but for maybe not too much longer, we're going to be jumping up to every week. So thank you to Jigglebox, David Terrace, Justin Tin Pot Gamer, Andrew Waite, Eric Nelson, Captain Crispy, Laurent Giroux, Mark Downey, Hermsky, Paul Bossman Harrington, Peter Mulholland, Chris Foltz, Gary Heather, Jed Byrne, Mark Durham, Mitsuyama, and Pixels at Dawn, and of course, Mac Chesers.
Thank you. Thanks, fellas.
All right, Aaron. So next week, it's going to be Rodland. We'll see you all then. I'm sorry, not next week. Next month, it's going to be Rodland. Until then, rewind tape
and press play.